I have
current geek.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Current Geek. This is Current Geek episode 233, and that gavel can only mean one thing. This is a talk show about items of interest to the geeks of the world and you. That didn't come out right. The geeks of the world and you. I'm Scott Johnson. He's Tom Merritt. Hello.
We are in session.
It was so official, it threw me. Like, whoa,
wait a minute. Yeah. I've never really, really settled on the perfect place for the gavel.
Your huge podium that you sit behind as a judge.
I think it should be welcome to Current Geek, bang bang.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. No, I get that. You know what? You're right, and that's how it should be.
Motion carried?
Yep, motion carried. I third it onto the house, or how does it work? I don't know who votes for this.
Onto the cows?
Onto the house.
Oh.
Yes, onto our cadre of voting cows who make all our decisions for us. I love that idea.
As I am recording this, by the way, my wife is in New York City for New York City Comic Con, and she just sent me a picture of Hakito.
Oh, he's...
They're having dinner as we record this episode.
Oh, that's lovely. Well, that means
I thought it would be a little app slappy reunion note.
That means he's over his, what he told me was the worst stomach flu he's ever had. So that's good.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Poor guy.
Hopefully he brings none of
that. Well, they seem to be eating dinner, so I guess he got over.
Hopefully he leaves no trace and your wife comes home 100% good. Yeah, so seriously. There you go. Well, that's great. It's good to have everybody here and listening. You may have noticed I have a note to mention that's at the bottom, but I'll mention it now. Tom and I are experimenting with the idea of recording this the old-fashioned podcast way, the 2007
reel
way.
To reel.
Reel to reel, but also without a live audience, just for a little while. See how we like it. We don't get a huge crowd on Tuesday nights, and not that that's the only reason. There's a few of you I'm sure loved coming on Tuesdays and hearing us do this live, but we're going to experiment a bit and see how it feels.
Not that we don't love you.
Yeah.
But there are some complexities to recording live that we're like, let's try it without it.
Yeah. It's a freeing feeling sometimes when there's so much other stuff you got to worry about. And then when you suddenly don't, and you can just focus on the content of your podcast, which, you know, again, 99% of your listeners get it that way.
A lot of it has to do with the video, too.
Yeah.
I wonder if we... Down the road, let's see how this goes, but maybe we stream to the Discord.
Oh, hey, that's all right. That's an all right idea.
Just the audio.
Yeah, we could do that easy.
If there's enough of you who are like, oh, man, I just want to at least listen.
Yeah, this is entirely possible.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, we'll see what we can do there. Hey, welcome to the show. We should dive right in. We got lots to talk about, and it all starts with this.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Oh, tell me what happened last week.
You know, we played that, 233 times now?
Yeah.
Or close to it, anyway.
Yeah.
And, infant radio. It just, I think it struck me this way before, maybe once, but like radio for infants.
Yeah.
Like
infant radio. Hey, I hadn't thought of that. A bunch of little kids with headphones on. Sure.
And it's just like, gog, 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 gog. But that's not what we're here to talk about. Deborah Chow has been named as executive producer and director of the Disney Plus series about Obi-Wan Kenobi. That we already know will star Ewan McGregor. If you're like, Deborah Chow, why do I know that name, Deborah Chow? Well, it's because Chow has worked on Jessica Jones, Mr. Robot, American Gods, Better Call Saul, and Lost in Space, as well as on The Mandalorian. We haven't seen her work on The Mandalorian yet. That doesn't come until November 12th, but it's a pretty decent pedigree.
Yeah, that resume's strong as far as I'm concerned, especially visually. Like Mr. Robot, Jessica Jones... Better Call Saul. They have quite a tone to them, and
not everybody likes all of these, but I do.
Yeah, I like. Oh, I like
this
season.
Is my greatest hits, right? Well, American Gods kind of lost me, but I'm not gonna blame Deborah Chow for that.
No, season one was cool. Season two lost its way.
Yeah,
but they may get that back. I don't know.
But I love Mr. Robot. Love Better Call Saul. Loved Lost in Space. I love Jessica Jones. I know not everybody does, but it's my cup of tea.
Yeah,
my drink.
It's a good one. This is good news. I don't. You know. I guess I'm, it's weird when this got announced and then they just kind of kept adding to it. It was like, oh, well, there's going to be an Obi-Wan series. Okay. That's cool. I wonder who they'll cast. It'd be cool if it was Ewan McGregor. And then it was announced that Ewan McGregor was indeed in it. And that was like, oh, okay, well, I'm a little more piqued now. This is interesting. And now that we've got a serious executive producer, director name attached to this thing with a good resume, I'm if you checked me physically, you would find that I am excited. Well, wait, that's the wrong way of putting that. I'm excited about this show. Let me put it that way.
Turn your head and get excited.
Whereas before I was less so, but now I think I'm in, and I'll look forward to seeing what they do. I mean, do you?
Okay. Yeah. Go ahead. I was worried about something, and I just did a little math. Ewan McGregor was born in 1971.
Yep.
And so when he was playing Obi-Wan in the prequels, he was meant to be the young Obi-Wan, and he was, in fact, a young man. He was in his 30s, early 30s. So I was like, wait a minute, how old is Ewan? Is he getting too close to Alec Guinness to be comfortable? Mm-hmm. And the answer is probably no, he's not. Yeah. Alec Guinness was 63 when he made Star Wars. So Alec Guinness lived till 2000?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was.
He lived to see the prequels?
He was a long. There was some longevity. Well, who knows if he saw him, but yes, he.
Well, I mean, he was alive when the first of the prequels came out.
He may not have cared or had early. Maybe had an early screener of Phantom Menace and was just mortified, and maybe that's what did him in the end. I don't know. I don't want to put any rumors out there. maybe there's a reason he only made it to 2000. I'm just saying.
Phantom Menace came out, what, 98,
99? 99, yeah. 99.
Yeah.
Came out. So 99 was a weird year because it was the year I had the most disappointing science fiction movie in Phantom Menace. And
he died
exciting.
August 5th, 2000. So It took a year to kill him. Okay.
I mean, the DVD release, really, that was the last straw.
Maybe that's what it is. Special editions. We're like, oh, I can't take it.
No, that's funny because we do
poor Ewan McGregor. Here we are talking about Alec Guinness when it's Ewan McGregor who's going to be Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
And I assume with Ewan McGregor cast, this will cover the early days of Tatooine. What was Obi-Wan up to when he first hid himself out? How did he hide? What kind of cover story? How did he keep people from knowing who he was? I assume that's what we're going to get, right?
I would think so. That would fit with the timeline. But also, not that it worries me, but it seems like The Mandalorian has a very similar backdrop. It seems like it's a lot of Outer Rim, ugly planets with a lot of dirt and sand. In that trailer anyway.
That's a good point.
They could go lots of places, obviously. The Mandalorian is not so much.
But you are talking about Outer Rim, deserty,
yeah,
you know, Warren universe situations.
Exactly.
Not that you can't have more than one of those.
No, no, no. You certainly could. But also in the case of Obi-Wan, he's got
Ben Kenobi, yep, private eye.
He ends up being a little more hermity than anyone else. So he ends up on Tatooine in a very grounded way for a long time. So I assume most of the movie will happen there. And I'm 100% for this, by the way, because I love that planet.
Well, it's a series, not a movie.
I keep saying movie. But that's the nice thing about these shows. They feel like they're going to be... These aren't going to be... Do you remember back when George Lucas...
He can't do too much to call attention to himself. Remember, he's hiding out. So how are you going to have a believable story that's not just him like in his being a hermit? You know, each episode is him, you know, making blue milk.
I mean, it's got to be more than that.
Yeah, it has to be.
It has
to be in a way that doesn't attract attention, or you'll be like, how did the Empire not know he was there?
You right.
Know, constantly.
What if he just pokes around Owen's place once in a while and steals some moisture from the evaporators?
Moisture thief.
Yeah.
Kenobi.
That would be great.
Crazy old wizard.
Dirt wizard up the road. It keeps
stealing my moisture.
Exactly. So I don't know. On the whole, this is a great bit of news. And boy, they just need to get these shows out so we can finally dig in and see if Star Wars was meant for TV after all, which I actually think it very much is. Like, my theory is both of these.
I can't wait
are
for the Mandalorian.
Great. Yeah. Yeah. They're going
to
be great.
And I'm excited about Deborah Chow being on board for the Obi-Wan series, whatever they decide to call it.
Yep.
That's the other thing. I'm curious what they're going to call it.
Yeah.
Also good news. Disney and Sony reached an agreement on third Spider-Man movie. Yay. Disney got, if you care about this stuff, Disney got an increase to 25% of the equity stake and will co-finance 25% of the cost. Spider-Man gets to appear in one more MCU movie. So that meaning a non-Spider-Man movie. He'll make a, you know, crossover appearance. Next Spider-Man movie will arrive July 16th, 2021. So we don't get Spider-Man next year. Mm. We get it 2 years from now. Amy Pascal and Kevin Feige producing. There's also some talk that the Spider-Verse will acknowledge details from the MCU and vice versa. I find that the most intriguing. Could we see, like, not just references to characters, but could we see some crossover you know, alternate universe versions.
Well, part of the deal was that they get Spider-Man for at least one MCU film appearance. And if that's the case, then it tells me that there's a little more than just tertiary crossover. But yeah.
Well, the MCU appearance is no different than what he did in the Avengers movies, right? Well, that's not crossover.
Is it though? Because the Avengers, his job in the Avengers movies was big. Like
No. I'm saying that's an appearance. That is what this deal is talking about, is you get to use Spider-Man in one of your movies.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah,
he's going to show up in the Eternals maybe or something like that.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. And you would assume in full.
But they also said that the Spider-Verse, which is the Miles Morales stuff, is going to acknowledge details from the MCU and vice versa.
Oh, that's interesting. Now it's sinking in. That is interesting. And in my head, I'm just thinking, oh, well, of course we'll have a little crossover. But no, the Spider-Verse end of it, like, that's super interesting. I don't know where that goes.
There might be some talk about Miles Morales in an MCU movie. There might be some talk about what happened with the Eternals in the Spider-Verse movies. I'm hoping for, like, alternate Hawkeye shows up in the Spider-Verse or something like that.
Dude, one can dream.
Maybe not Hawkeye.
But he's cool though. But you know, get Jeremy Renner to voice it. I'd be fine with that. But it needs to be animated. Like, that's what I want more of. The Spider-Verse is probably my favorite. Just, it's right about my favorite superhero movie ever made. So for me, the more they can do there, the better. But didn't we all predict this, dude? This overall coming together and coming up with an agreement. We all said this was going to be fine.
Yeah.
Of course, it was. Too much money on the table. What are you going to do? You got
to
do it.
We talked about this on Cord Killers too, and we try not to pat ourselves on the back too much, because you know what? It's not about who was right about what. It's about the fact that they did the right thing for us in the end. That's what I'm saying.
I like your attitude.
That's Brian Brushwood's attitude, actually.
Oh, okay, good. I like Brian Brushwood's attitude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, thankfully, I wasn't too worried that this would not get worked out, and it got worked out. So, very excited.
It does. It's almost as if billions of dollars were at stake if they didn't do it. You know, it's almost
like they were just trying to figure out how to divide those billions of dollars up, and it took a while for them to be like, well, what if I get a little more? No. Okay.
Yeah. None of this should be shocking. The only part that was weird, I think, is that Sony sort of outed the story. I wouldn't say leaked it, but you know, they pushed it out there.
Did
with
they,
this
though?
Well, I mean, they pushed it That's out.
Not, I mean, everyone assumes it was Sony that leaked it because Sony responded to it.
May have been Disney.
But if Disney leaks it, Sony also could still respond to it. I have never been convinced that it was Sony that leaked the story, because it was in Disney's best interest from a PR perspective to leak a story. And when you're looking at who leaked a story, always look at who it benefits.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. Follow the money, yo.
Just saying. Scientists at Stanford and the University of California, San Francisco, aka UCSF, have discovered a way to stop a range of viruses in human cell cultures in mice. The viruses could not replicate inside cells, lacking the enzyme SETD3. So they were like, if we take away that enzyme, then the viruses don't replicate and they don't infect other cells. That approach worked to stop various entoviruses, among which are the rhinoviruses that cause the common cold, as well as viruses associated with asthma, encephalitis, and polio. Mm. Now, most of the headlines you saw probably trumpeted the cure for the common cold. ... is not here yet. Is really the rest of that headline if they'd written it. Because they hope to use this information about the enzyme to develop a broad antiviral drug that can stop antiviruses, but they don't want to disrupt normal cell function. If you just take out SETD3 from everybody's cells, that causes other things. That causes other problems. So this is a big advance, because they realized that disrupting this enzyme hurt rhinovirus replication and other enteroviruses. But it's not yet something that you can therapeutically apply to people.
Right. You can't just go get a thing from even your doctor, let alone over the counter.
Because that enzyme does other things.
Right, right.
That you want to happen.
Sure. It'd be nice if that's all it did, and then we could definitively
say,
here
you go. Yeah, we'd
just
be like, get rid of it, done.
Yeah.
No more
I like our, I like the science stories we do on here, because I just feel like we're, I don't know, it takes us in places I don't normally think about. And I'd completely missed this story until I saw it in our notes. And I got excited, because I am now heading toward a fall where I start to think about these things. I start to go, oh, yeah, I've gone a long time. I haven't had a cold or a virus for a long time. pretty excited to try to extend that as long as I can. And
well, and then there's the whole thing of like, I got the flu shot and I still got sick.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of times that's because you got a cold, which the flu shot doesn't protect you
from. Right. And some colds are worse than others. They seem like flus.
Yep.
Sometimes you got your flu shot so early that the variations they put later into the thing didn't get to you.
Right. Or more often than not, you got your flu shot and you got a different kind of flu than the flu shot protected you from.
Right.
The flu shot protected you from one kind of flu, but there's lots of kinds of flu out there.
Well, that's why I like this, because this feels like a thing at the spout, you know what I mean? Like,
well, and this would not protect you against influenza.
Right.
This protects you against enteroviruses. So can you imagine a world where they figure this out? They're like, oh, you just get this shot. It reduces the enzyme SETD3 or somehow like binds to a protein. No more colds. No one ever gets colds.
Wow.
But we still get the flu because we haven't quite perfected the flu antivirus yet.
Yeah, that would be funny. If we ever get to a place where all of that stuff's eradicated, we got... You know, I never thought about this stuff when I was younger, but if you do it too quickly, you end up saving millions of lives immediately because people die of the flu. People die of really bad colds if they're older, that sort of thing.
Hmm.
Suddenly your world has a different mortality rate in a very quick order.
Well, okay. I don't know that what you're saying is true.
That
is something that people who panic would say.
I don't know either. Yeah.
I don't know how many people die of colds that wouldn't die otherwise. And generally, when we've cured things that are really serious killers, more so than colds, like polio and stuff like that, we haven't seen an appreciable effect because the effects of nutrition and clean water are generally more of what causes population growth than curing diseases. And most developed countries' population is declining. Now, we're not seeing quite the same decline in developing countries that we thought we would as economies improve, but we might still. So I don't think it's going to really affect the population at all, to be honest.
Yeah, it's still pretty fascinating. I hope that they, the job is, as everyone knows, I got a little grandkid now. You know, he's a little tiny, little tiny guy. He's only 8 months old. It's my first foray into this this new world of I've got two generations behind me thing idea.
Wow.
I know. I don't like it. It's weird. Well, I mean, I do like it. I like it a lot, but it feels
weird.
You'll
live forever.
Yeah, that's the thing. But I would like it if he never got sick. So let's get on this, guys.
Oh, yeah.
Let's
cure this stuff fast.
Yep. No, I don't want a boogery kid in the house is what I'm saying.
No kidding. Who does? Boogery Kid was my Halloween cover band.
Oh.
For the band Halloween.
The band Halloween. The okay.
Yeah.
All right.
You know, that almost sounds like a Far Side comic. Remember the Far Side? Gary Larson ran from January 1st, 1995, or ran until January 1st, 1995. Well, had a website. Website had not been updated since 1999 by some reports. However, on September 14th, 2019, a new cartoon appeared on the website showing an explorer using a blowtorch to melt some of the strip's most iconic characters from a block of large ice, along with the words uncommon, unreal, and, parenthetical soon to be, unfrozen. A new online era of the Far Side is coming.
So this is a significant thing for me in particular because I worshipped at the feet of Gary Larson. He is my number one. If
you
not,
worshipped the feet or at the feet?
At the feet. At the feet. He was never particularly good at drawing feet, so I would never worship the feet themselves. But but Gary Larson's impact cannot be understated in my particular life. He was everything I wanted to be in both the way he created humor, in the kinds of humor he liked. He was very punny. In fact, he kind of reminds me of me and you sometimes, the conversations we have. Gary Larson was everywhere for me, and between him and a couple other creators, I mean, they were the guys that I just idolized. And all through high school, all I wanted to do was be a Gary Larson type cartoonist. Single panel, single gag, that stuff just was so great. And his particular bent on things was so new and fresh and unusual at the time. Then he goes away, disappears for a very long time. That website, by the way, if you go look at the Wayback Machine in 99, was... Whew, definitely something that was made in 99. It's really, really old. And to see this thing, this great big layout pop up and everyone freak out got me so excited. We don't actually still know exactly what it means. For all we know, this is a fun little idea the marketing department has at whoever owns the rights for merchandising or publishing more books to just revitalize the calendar slash collection world of Gary Larson's comics, and it has nothing to do with new content. The dude's 70. Not that he can't continue to create at 70, but he has gone this long. I mean, 99 is what, 20? Is that 20 years? Or, I'm sorry, 95, 25 years ago? 25 years of not, you know, almost pushing 30 of not doing anything with it. And now suddenly he may be coming back, like be still my beating heart. But we don't actually know. And that's the bummer of this, is we don't know what this means.
Maybe he's been secretly creating cartoons since 1995.
Oh my gosh, dude.
And they're just going to start releasing.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a brilliant idea if that's what he did, because it would also fit his whole thing, right?
It kind of would, wouldn't it?
Oh, it'd be so.
I mean, like, oh, guess what? You're now going to get these. I have never stopped. I'm not going to stop, but I paused your ability to see them so that they will continue to have new Far Sides long after I'm dead.
Yeah. And not only that, you never once had a notion I was doing it. That would be amazing. I mean, I know we're making this up in our heads, but that would be
totally
amazing.
Just making this up. This is, don't tell your friends this is what's happening. Okay?
No. But it'd be amazing. It'd be the greatest thing of all time. But anyway, if you you should keep your eye on it over there. It's I think it's farside.com or
I just had it up and then I closed it. Yeah.
Farsighted.com, something like that. I forget. But keep your eye on it. Obviously, people will be talking about it. This thing kind of took over.
It's thefarside.com.
And he may be joining the likes of Burke Breathed with his revival of Bloom County and a few others from that era. I mean, we're starting to see like kind of everybody who was somebody big in that era, minus Calvin and Hobbes creator, name who just left me. Can't think of his name all of a sudden. But he's the only one that hasn't really shown any interest in doing anything. But lately you see all this stuff coming. And now this, oh my gosh, dude, the 80s and 90s are back.
I'm expecting a comeback of Steve the Duck now.
Oh, shut up. I'll have to go talk to that guy about it. I actually kind of miss doing things with Steve the Duck.
Steve was one of my faves.
Now that you're saying that.
I'm not even kidding. Really? I always love Steve.
Oh, yeah. Damn it. All right. Now you're inspiring me. Better read the next article before I go draw.
Yeah. Instead of maybe you should just secretly make Steve cartoons. And then when you're 90, you can release it.
Okay.
Zephyr Penor from the University of Cambridge in the UK and Emily Sanford at Columbia University in New York have written a paper describing a feasible space elevator. Space elevators.
Whoa.
Space elevators based on Earth are usually how this goes. They've been considered unfeasible because the material needed is just not strong enough. But Penor and Sanford propose basing the elevator on the moon, not Earth.
Oh,
the slower rotation of the moon once a month compared to once a day for the Earth reduces the centrifugal force on the elevator. So you would have it based on the moon, pointed at the Earth. Remember, the moon's face stays pointed at the Earth. You have the cord that the elevator goes up and down going right through the Lagrange point, an area where lunar and terrestrial gravity cancel out. And carbon polymers like Xylon would be strong enough to handle those forces if you terminated it at geosynchronous orbit on Earth. So just above the Earth's atmosphere. Or maybe even slightly in it. A proof of concept line, the thickness of a pencil lead would cost a few billion dollars. But the authors point out that this is something that billionaires constantly do, spend a few billion dollars to prove a concept, like SpaceX, for instance. You'd still need fuel for this concept because you'd have to get whatever you want off the surface of the Earth into orbit. So you'd need a rocket to launch from the ground and take it to the space elevator. But then you could get it from orbit to the moon at much lower cost than taking a rocket all the way. They're saying it like about two-thirds of the trip, the two-thirds of the fuel you'd need would be cut out.
Wow.
And you'd use solar power to operate the space elevator out there. Yeah.
Always been a big fan of this idea, and I always liked it in books and stuff. Old Man's War had a great space elevator in it. Books like that. I love it. I love the concept. So yeah, let's do it. I'm ready. I don't need a space shuttle and all of the rigmarole. I want to just get into a thing and just be taken there. How long would that take me?
Well,
by
you're
the
still
way?
Going to need to go on a rocket from Earth to the elevator.
Oh, that's
and
a good point.
Probably this is mostly going to be used for cargo. But think of it this way. if you're on the moon mining water and minerals to be used for exploration to Mars, the space elevator idea on the moon gets all of that stuff off the moon and into the Lagrange point where you've got the balanced gravity. So you can start building space stations with moon materials and even building ships to take you to Mars. You don't even have to take the stuff off of Earth in that case.
Does it make me a bad lover of space and space exploration that tonight was the first time I'd heard of the Lagrange point?
Well, I don't think it makes you a bad lover of space, but welcome. Welcome to the Lagrange point. That is a very important area.
Clearly, I didn't know about
space travel, especially going to the moon and back.
Yeah, I didn't know about that. Have we known about that for a long time? Is that?
Like, oh, yeah.
Okay. So like even in the 60s, when we were shooting the rockets up there to the moon, we knew.
The Lagrange point, of course, was discovered by ZZ Top.
I knew you were going to go there. Sweet. Someone had to do it. Someone had to.
In a shack outside Lagrange.
Great.
Joseph Louis Lagrange discovered the two of the three Lagrange points. The first was discovered by Leonard Euler, and Lagrange published an essay on the three-body problem in 1772. So we've known about it for a while.
Wow. That's very cool. I'm all for this. I want to go. Like, I want to go to the, I want this mode because it seems like crazy hard to pull off the first time. But once you do it, that thing will be like the regular deal. It's impossible for my head not to go science fiction with this, though. I just can't not do it. So for me,
remember, you still have to get off the surface of the Earth. So
for
human travel, it may not be as great as science fiction has promised. But it's going to solve a lot of other problems if it ends up being true.
We just need
it ends up working.
Teleportation's all we need. If we can do that, forget about elevators.
Honestly, teleportation comes along and then it's all for naught.
Everything's for naught.
Don't even need the space.
All forms of transportation are no longer needed for anything ever again.
Well, I guess there might be a distance limit to teleportation, or else you wouldn't have had the Enterprise.
That's a good point.
Like,
but
if you could just teleport across the galaxy, you wouldn't need to board a ship at all.
That's totally true, and they never really addressed that, so it's interesting you bring that up. But also,
well, I think they did. I think they talked about the beam. You know, there's a limit to how far you can beam. It's out of range, sir.
Oh, okay. Because it was an actual beam. Like, you had to beam. Yeah. Beam down wasn't just nomenclature.
I imagine the beam just kind of spread out over distance so that it just became too diffuse and you couldn't reintegrate.
Yeah. In a way, the space elevator is almost like Jack in the Beanstalk.
Follow
the beam. Anyway, but on Earth, it'll be amazing, Tom, because you'll never have to wait for another restaurant. You basically go to Texas Roadhouse by beaming there, and they say, how many? Of four. She goes, it'll be 45 minutes. Okay, cool. See you then. And you just blip right back out to home where you got finish some yard work, watch a TV
we'll
show.
Yeah, we'll text you when it's time.
Oh, man. Or just beam the food to me. There's so much of life that changes the minute we can start doing this.
Yeah, you'll only eat in a restaurant when you want to be there for their atmosphere.
Yeah, and then that means they'd have to work really hard for atmosphere and not just phone it in because to really want to...
And then you'll be ordering most of your food through Uber Beam.
Right, Uber Beam. Lyft Beam. I love it. These are all great ideas.
Actually, Lyft is going to get in the space elevator business. It only makes sense.
Yeah, that's true. Well, these are great stories, as always. And if you are like, man, where do they get such great stories? A lot of it's on the backs of our good listeners who go on over to our Reddit page, which is currentgeek.reddit.com, and submit these stories. Tom, who should we give credit to this week?
Well, longtime listeners of the show have heard of Jeff Rose. Jeff Rose continues to do yeoman's work, submitting excellent stories in our subreddit. But that's not to say that Gatekeeper, very understated, and Gadget Chaser also aren't in there submitting great stories. They are, and you could join them or at least support them by voting at currentgeek.reddit.com. Rolling, rolling,
rolling, rolling. It's time for Rolling, a new segment. I'm not going to call it new anymore. It's a regular segment called Keep on Rolling. That's right, where Tom reads Scott a passage from French literary critic Roland Barthes' seminal work, Mythologies. And we're going to do it again today. Tom, what did you bring this time? Let's hear it.
It seems to work to limit what I read. So we're just going with the quotable nuggets now. Mm-hmm. This one is about cars. Okay. Roland Barthes wrote, "I think that cars today are almost the exact equivalent of the great Gothic cathedrals. I mean the supreme creation of an era, conceived with passion by unknown artists and consumed in image, if not in usage, by a whole population which appropriates them as a purely magical objet.
Interesting. So that means, hold on, I'm going to get my head around it.
Mm-hmm.
What cars represent and how they look to us matters as much or more than their purpose.
So and like their meaning matters even more than their purpose.
Yes, 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 which is why you're going to have to pry a lot of keys out of a lot of cold, dead hands in America if you ever want to force automated driving on people. Because they, I mean,
it really does. It does shed some light on that attitude, right? Because Gothic cathedrals were built by workmen whose names we don't know. Mm-hmm. We often know the architect, but we don't know the actual craftsman.
Right.
They were in the medieval times, sort of representative of the greatest, you know, passion of the era, right. Religion.
Right.
And often the populace that saw them didn't get to go in them. That happened a lot. So consumed in image, if not in usage. And I think that's what Barth is saying is we don't know who works on these cars. We often know the designer maybe, but we don't know who actually builds them. We don't know the names of those people. And the coolest cars that everyone talks about, the McLaren and Lamborghini, and most people don't drive them.
No, but we pine for them.
Yeah, you know? Some people do.
Yeah, that's very good. I liked it. That's a solid one this week from Roland. We'll bring more of those to you next time we do one of these episodes. Real quick reminder that here on the show, we are backed by you. That's right, a crowdfunded effort here at Current Geek, and you can go be a part of that crowdfunding on the first day of the month. Today's October 1st, by the way, so a great time to hop in. Patreon.com/Current Geek. I am in the midst of preparing this month's upcoming art that will be sent to people in physical form. But there's lots of digital levels and rewards as well. So don't worry if you can't do that one. There's lots of other ones. Want to pay a big thanks to those who already support us. Thank you very, very much. And if you would like to consider doing it, go check out what we have on offer and join the big family that is patreon.com/currentgeek. That's patreon.com/currentgeek.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
And now a segment that used to be an entire show called Forecast, F-O-U-R cast. It's only two of us, though. Anyway, we predict the future in pop culture and technology and some other form. One prediction this week, and it's Tom's. Tom, do you want to explain what you got?
Yeah, I was just reading an article about superconductors and how there's this one research effort has gotten to pretty close to being able to create a superconductor at 44 degrees Fahrenheit, which is tantalizingly close to room temperature. And it's not there yet. This is still experimental. There's so much about it that is still to be determined. But it made me think that batteries are going to be revolutionized when we finally discover how to do room temperature superconductivity. Wow. Room temperature superconductivity is theoretically absolutely possible. We just don't know what materials we need to make it happen. Mm. And everybody's looking at it and trying to figure it out. And the thing that caught my eye or my ear, eye, whatever, in this article was they are now using machine learning to cycle through the possible materials faster. And they're finding it works really well. So instead of just trial and error and saying, well, I bet that might work, and then occasionally hitting on something that's a little better, they're making big advances by saying, okay, narrow down the options for us, machine learning. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to hit, I'm not even going to put a time limit on it, but within years, mm-hmm. we're going to hit on room temperature superconductivity. That's going to replace lithium ion batteries, because every research we've seen about squeezing a little more out of lithium ion batteries just gets swamped by the efficiency of design. Mm-hmm. Battery technology is not promising in that respect. Mm-hmm. But if we come up with something entirely new, then suddenly you're going to have devices that you don't need to charge effectively.
They're just always on the grid, kind of.
They'll just last for years on a charge, right? And like that kind of thing will just go out the window as something you even have to think about. Wireless charging, plugging in, efficient battery, all of with super, with room temperature superconductivity comes around, it's quite possible that suddenly power sources are not an issue. And when that happens, suddenly all bets are off on design and what you can make when you don't have to worry about sticking a, you know, more than 3/4 of your device being a battery.
Now, for clarification and for those listening, it doesn't matter what the room temperature is, right? Like, the, that's not the key here. It isn't like, oh, it has to be 72 all the time or your thing's not going to be on. Yeah,
no, the idea of room temperature superconductivity is that it works at room temperature.
Whatever the room
is.
You
don't have to think about the temperature.
Right.
There obviously might be situations where it's too cold or too hot, but that's true of lithium ion batteries right now as well.
Right.
But it works at a wide range of temperatures that are considered to be pretty normal.
That's super cool. Yeah. I mean, that's, yes, that's where we want to be. Like, and I think you're right that it has to be something so wholly new that it isn't just another step in one direction or another from the current lithium ion world we live in. Elsewise, we're just not going to, you know, there's no innovation there. We're done. We've maxed it out. The big innovation has come from, oh, hey, Samsung's figured out a way to preserve battery by running this little thing on a lower refresh rate or whatever. And I guess the new Apple Watch is like that. They got a refresh rate thing that's causing less draw on the battery. Those are all cool and everything, but they're all just like, it's, they all have to keep the same king happy and they have to dance around the king. This is like subverting the king and saying, no, 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 we got our own way over here. And that's exciting. I love this idea. So I'm all for it, especially the way you spelled in here. Superconductor.
Oh man, I can't type.
No, it's all right. I enjoyed it. I also knew what you wanted. I knew what you meant.
It's basically a never-ending game for people who read the Daily Tech News Show show notes to find my typos.
Yeah, I like it. It's a good time. They're actually more rare than you think, people. It's not an easy game. All right.
Not that rare.
Hey, look at this. It's the best thing of all time this week. Something we all think is, or at least we each individually think, is just the greatest thing of all time, at least right now, at least this week. And for me, it is iPad OS. Now, you might say, well, what's the big deal there? It's not that different than iOS has always been. Well, one thing, it is a new fork, or not a new fork, but a new, it's a split. It's an OS all unto itself now, which maybe in these early days of iPad OS isn't all that significant, but we'll see what that means in the long run. But one of the immediate impacts was something they mentioned on stage briefly, and then I heard and I went, ooh, you better be right about this. Turns out they were totally right about it. They said that the performance of iPad OS would increase the pencil speed in a significant, like 30% faster sort of way, less latency. I don't remember the exact number. It may not have been 30, but whatever it was. And I remember hearing that and going, oh, really? Sure enough, it is palpably faster. And I compared it against one that wasn't updated yet because my daughter's got one as well. On a Pro that she uses for school, and we both sat down and I went back and forth the exact same models of both devices, the pencil and the iPad, and the iPad OS version of use was unbelievably insanely fast. I can't believe how fast it is. In fact, I'm kind of annoyed that it wasn't this fast to begin with and they just now figured it out, you know, 2.5 generations into the thing. But then part of me is like, well, you know, that's how this stuff goes and it's fine. You should be glad for what you've got. It was already the best performing pen tablet combo on the market in terms of latency. And now it is just miles faster than even what it was before. So I am thrilled about that as an artist who is frequently at his tablet. That is a ginormous improvement on an already amazing combo. So well done. iPad OS, you are my favorite thing of this week. Tom, what do you have this week?
My favorite thing is a saw.
What? like you cut stuff with?
Yeah, it's Corona Razor Tooth Folding Pruning Saw with a 10-inch curved blade. I feel like it's quite possible that I've done this before as my best thing of all time this week. In fact, I'm gonna start looking right now. I should have done this earlier. I had a couple of things on the side of the house that were growing a little too close to the foundation for my comfort. One was just a tree.
Yeah.
The other was a palm. Now the palm I was able to just dig up and put somewhere else, you know, because it was in looser dirt and palm roots aren't quite at that size anyway, weren't quite that hard to work with. But that tree I was looking at, and I had asked the guy that mows my lawn if he could get to it, and he was like, yeah, maybe, I don't know, you know, and I could tell he really didn't want to. So I'm like, fine, I'll just do it myself. I went back there with this tiny 10-inch handsaw. It's like a switchblade kind of form factor, where you press a little button. It's got a safety. You press that button in and unfold it. You should wear gloves doing it. Mm-hmm. I had bought it to trim our Christmas tree last year, because the Christmas tree we had a bunch of branches at the bottom, super low, and I had to take them off. This thing works amazing. I went in, I just, in like 20 seconds, boom, 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 that tree was down. And it was probably 6.5 feet tall, maybe about as big around as your forearm. Mm-hmm. Okay, not the Rock's forearm, but like a normal man's forearm. And so it was pretty thick. And then after I was done with that, I looked at the stump and I was like, well, I kind of left it up a little far from the ground. It's not like people walk around back here on this little side of the house because it doesn't lead anywhere. But I'm like, you know what? I should better just take that out. And I just went down, you know, 30, 35 seconds, had it cut flush to the ground.
Wow. I mean,
and I'm not talking about like, well, Tom, you know, you're built like the rock. I mean, it wasn't strength. This thing is just super sharp and works well. And it's got 1,039 positive ratings on Amazon.
Like, wow. That's good.
I know it's weird that I'm talking about a saw.
No, it's good.
But it was something that I thought was going to take me all afternoon, mm-hmm. pretty much. And I was done in 10, 15 minutes.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, this is great. I'm not very good at that kind of stuff, and I don't know. If someone said to me, hey, what do you think the brand I should get for this new drill I'm looking at or whatever? I'd never know any of those things. This is not my bag. It's so nice to hear, though, when somebody... let's put it this way, in the realm like you and I are, which are, you know, we're smart guys, we know what's up.
Yeah, but we're not Mr. experts. Handyman.
Yeah, me either. So when you hit paydirt like that, there's no better feeling. And also, you know, in a day where there's just a million competing products and you never know if you're going to get the right one, and it's a giant hassle if you have to try to get another one. Or by the way, if the job itself doesn't go right because the thing you got sucks, then you're in a world of hurt and you got to deal with other issues that may have been caused by that thing being a bad saw. So I think this is great.
This is for things up to 6 inches diameter. This is not meant for the largest, you know, so you're not going to cut down actual full grown trees with this, but you need to trim some branches down. You need to, like I say, trim up a Christmas tree, $27, $30 tops.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a good little saw. Wear a glove.
Yeah, wear a glove, guys. Always wear a glove.
Don't get blister. Yeah. And protect your hand.
Yeah.
All that. Be careful. It's a saw after all. It's very sharp. That's its whole positive thing.
Its whole job.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why, I mean, don't blame the saw that it's sharp. That's what you want. Just get cover you protect
right,
yourself.
Right. Yeah, I'm just saying, you know, don't be out, you know, playing with this thing like you're a ninja or something. But it, really good saw. It's the Corona razor tooth folding pruning saw. They have 7, 8, and 10-inch versions. I got the 10-inch version. I was thinking back, like, what are the things I did over the last 2 weeks that are new, that aren't usual, that, and then it struck me, like, that was something I was kind of dreading doing, and this saw just made it like, I'm done.
That's a great feeling.
I didn't have to think about it.
Nothing wrong with that feeling at all.
Yeah,
I think that's great. And boy, it's great to see the beer people branching out into power saws, you know?
Yeah. I'm waiting for the Corona Light razor tooth folding.
That's good. You only use it on the beach.
Lots half of the blades.
There you go. Half the blades for twice the price. Well done. Hey, quick email from a listener. And by the way, if you have your own thoughts about, stuff we talk about in segments like forecast, you can always email us currentgeek@gmail.com. Or you can leave us a voicemail at 801-471-0462. Phil Warner wrote in, says, hey guys, loved listening to the show on Snow White. Grimm's fairy tales and the oral traditions they are based on have fascinated me for years. Mm. You talked about how Snow White was, especially when considering, dark, especially when considering it was a Disney piece, and I couldn't agree more. In some versions of Snow White, there are more than seven dwarves. In some, there aren't dwarves at all, but bandits. In all cases, she's offered servitude in exchange for a place to live. But in some versions, this is portrayed as just being about slavery. And in the stories with the bandits, she is usually expected to provide, quote-unquote, companionship.
Oh,
along with cooking and cleaning, etc. In many versions, Snow White's protectors are slowly killed off by attacks from the queen before the whole poison apple episode. The queen herself is often Snow White's mother, not stepmother. See example from the 1812 version published by Grimm's. And intends to have Snow White's organs cooked in one way or another so that she, sometimes the king, can eat them. The queen is usually tortured to death by the prince, i.e. attaching red-hot shoes of iron to her feet that make her dance around until she dies of exhaustion. That's awful.
Wow.
And, of course, there's this whole thing where the princes find the body, quote-unquote body, in the woods, claim it for themselves, and just move Snow White from one kind of servitude to another.
The prince finds a body in the woods and claims it for himself and just moves Snow White from one. Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's the guy. He's the dirty bird.
In some versions.
Yeah. That's wild. It says this time is property to be owned. Anyway, on one happy note, thanks again for what you guys are doing. Have a great one, Phil. Well, thank you, Phil, first of all, for the great email. But also, I didn't know any of that stuff about Snow White.
And it really makes me want a Blumhouse Snow White.
Oh, my gosh, dude. Blumhouse. A Blumhouse Snow White. I'm in.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm in. Sign me up. Where do I get tickets? Is this out yet? What's going on?
What's holding it up?
Yeah, what's happening? What's going on? We're sick of waiting, everybody. This thing I hadn't even thought about once. Now I demand it.
Blumhouse Grimm's Fairy Tales.
Oh, wow.
Like basically just being true to the source material.
Yeah, you don't have to stretch it, right? You don't have to make it more shocking. It sounds like it's plenty shocking on its own.
Yeah, no kidding.
I'm gonna probably rabbit hole that a little because I do like that stuff as well. And I just have never looked that deep into those fairy tales, but I find that kind of stuff super fascinating as well.
Good stuff, Phil.
To send in emails like Phil does, be like Phil and send one in. It is currentgeek@gmail.com. And as always, we love your emails. Stick around at the end of the show because Legal Geek will be back this week covering Is Web Scraping of Public Information Illegal? It's a review of a California case involving LinkedIn and whether the CFAA anti-hacking law applies to such web scraping. The word scraping makes me uncomfortable. I'll just put that out there. I don't like it. It makes me feel weird. Just a thought. I don't know why it bugs me, but it does. All right, Tom, that's going to do it. Except next week, it is important that we note that we have an autopilot edition of the show. That's right. We look at a pilot and we talk about it. And this time we're doing Doogie Howser, which is currently in its entirety on Hulu, which is super easy to get. So grab the first episode, pilot episode of Doogie Howser, and enjoy that discussion next week.
And then we'll talk about those early days of Bret Easton Ellis.
Yep.
No, wait. Anthony Michael Hall.
Jerry Von Stinker Belly.
John Wayne Gacy. No, definitely not. No, it has three names.
Yeah. Why can't I think of it? Why can't I think of it? What's wrong with us? His name is...
It started as a joke, and then neither one of us could actually remember his name.
C. Thomas Howell.
Neil Patrick Harris.
Jeez Louises.
We apologize to Neil Patrick Harris and his family.
Yeah, they seem very nice. Anyway, so that's next week. And another reminder, I said at the top of the show, I'll say it again. We are trying to do the show, I call it 2007 style. It's when all podcasts are recorded off
retro
stream. Yeah, it's super retro. Focusing on the audio experience and not worrying so much about video production while we do it. We'll see how this goes, but that's how it'll be for now. Tom, anything going on you want to mention to the fine people at home before we go?
Well, sure. Free Tom Newsletter. FreeTomNewsletter.com is a great way to just get a note from me every week saying what's up. It'll have links to all the shows that I do in there. If you're like want to just see like what was Tom's top five from the Tech Republic, what were the topics on DTNS? I got links to all that stuff in there. But also just kind of write a note letting you know what's been happening, what I've been working on, what some of my favorite things were in the week. So if that sounds like something you wouldn't mind reading, you can also reply to it and just send me a note.
Nice.
And say, hey, I saw your note. Here's my note. So go sign up at freetomnewsletter.com.
Sounds fantastic. If you are listening and you're like, you know what I really could go for is some D&D action, Well, good news. The Frog Pants Network and myself host a show called There Will Be Dungeons on weekends. It's on every Sunday. We do live stream that as well as put it on the podcast and YouTube archive. And it's a giant playthrough. We're in our second year or second season of that story. And we role play, we laugh, we have a good time. We play D&D 5th edition. And it's great. If you are thinking, man, that sounds like something I might like, you can kind of hop on anytime. There's also the archives if you want to catch up on all the story and learn about these characters. All available at therewillbedungeons.com. That is going to do it for us. Thank you all for being here. Again, patreon.com/currentgeek to help us out. currentgeek.com for everything else. For me, for Tom, for all of you, we'll see you next time.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we cover a California federal case decided this week on whether scraping of publicly available data on websites is illegal when against the terms of service of the website provider. Last December, we covered an interesting web scraping case where Allen Ross Manufacturing tried to craft intellectual property causes of action to stop web scraping and content copying from another company. If you don't recall that segment, scraping is the process of extracting data from the HTML of a web page in a similar manner as a person viewing the website on the browser, generally for the purposes of data collection and manipulation. This case stems from a small company called HiQ, which scrapes data from publicly available portions of LinkedIn and sells reports to employers about which of their employees may be looking for new jobs. LinkedIn sent a cease and desist letter to HiQ, indicating that such practice was against their terms and also illegal under the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, the 1986 anti-hacking law still in effect today in the U.S. We've also covered the CFAA before, and it makes it a crime to access a computer without authorization or to exceed authorized access. This law is broadly written because it predates modern web technologies, but the law is still in force and is continually being interpreted for how it works in the modern context. LinkedIn argued for an interpretation of the CFAA that would make any affirmative action of an owner, including a cease and desist letter, prohibitions in terms of service, and technical measures like IP-based blocking, all be sufficient to show that the offending access was unauthorized and effectively illegal hacking under the law. The California District Judge declined such an interpretation of the CFAA. He noted that when you publish a publicly available website, it is like having open store hours in that you implicitly give members of the public permission to access that data. The judge argued that such a broad reading could enable website owners to block access for any reason, including improper reasons like gender or race discrimination, with the backing of a threat of federal law supporting that blocking. In short, the potential outcomes from interpreting the CFAA to cover HiQ's conduct in this case would be very problematic for future cases. The judge further drew a line between public and private portions of websites, generally being distinguished by password authentication or the like. If a page is available to the public without a password, it's presumptively public, and any download of data from that should not be considered a violation of the CFAA. That may also be a key element of whether this decision gets overturned if it is appealed to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. A prior Ninth Circuit decision was issued in 2016 regarding scraping of Facebook data from another company, and in that case, the scraping was deemed illegal under CFAA, based on a cease and desist letter sent by Facebook to the scraping company. However, one distinction there is that the data scraped was behind password protection, albeit with the permission of the password owner. That will certainly be what HiQ argues is a critical distinguishing factor should this case get appealed and LinkedIn tries to make that 2016 precedent case apply again here. We will monitor for such an appeal as it will help define an important new frontier of how the federal anti-hacking law will be applied moving forward. The bottom line is, no matter how this case linking web scraping and anti-hacking laws comes out, it seems likely that there will be a push in the coming years for Congress to supplement the CFAA with updated new laws that better define the limits of modern web practices with regard to criminality. If that does not occur, there will continue to be many cases where old, broad language gets interpreted based largely on societal norms, like in this California case, or litigants coming up with unique claims to avoid being locked into the CFAA, as done on other cases we've covered. Once again, the law struggles sometimes to keep up with the tech. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.